Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me this evening is my co-host, as always,
Jim Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. Chad, it has been another successful year at the box office. The most successful year in the history of cinema.
Again?
Again. Thank you, inflation. So, as we come together, and we are not watching a football game today as we were a year ago, but we are going to watch, we are going to sit here and we are going to talk about 2018, what we liked, we didn't like, what we actually spent money on that no human being should spend money on repeatedly.
That's more you than me.
And then we're going to talk about 2019, another small year, especially for the House of Mouse.
Oh, yeah, small, real small. I can't believe they're doing this.
The Fox merger becomes official in 13 days.
Are we? So when that comes up, I always look at the news and I'm like, I know people are saying this. I don't know if the government has said they'll say. So I'm just going to wait until somebody says, put a big stamp on it and be like, done.
No, the government did approve.
Okay.
The government did okay the merger, mainly because, you know, Rupert didn't sell Fox News.
Okay. That was quick.
Mm-hmm.
This is really quick.
It's a really big acquisition, but there was no acrimony the way there was for the AT&T Time Warner deal. There was no battle over a network. No reason for the Justice Department to really get heated over it. So,
there are downsides to this because lots of people are going to lose their jobs and all this stuff. I understand that.
Bunch of marketing people, bunch of publicity people.
Just everything that duplicates. If you're on the Fox side, you're probably not coming over to the Disney side. That's how business works. That is an unfortunate side effect. And I don't want to take lightly all those people losing their livelihoods. But so we got these big gaping holes in Marvel's schedule and a whole bunch of IP that just came rolling on in that I honestly didn't think was going to get approved until like July. It is now January. The way they work, they can have a movie in production by next year for 2021. So in my fanboy brain, it's like, I don't care about X-Men, I can get Fantastic Four in 2020, 2021 at the earliest. And so when you factor into what Feige's comments have been recently, like, he basically said, you know, we might have already started working on some stuff since it seems like everything is like gung-ho. It just kind of like feels like we might see stuff sooner than later, and I'm here for that.
I'm glad that you mentioned Mr. Feige, because he has again, as of 2018, refused to take up our invitation for question time with Mr. Feige, which fandom very much deserves. But in an addendum to that, or in an abundance of that, go check out the Playback podcast. He sat down with Variety in that podcast, and it's really one of the best interviews I've ever heard Feige do. Feige is a fantastic politician on junkets where he gets asked a bunch of questions he can't answer. He's more compelling of a figure when you're not trying to basically bonus round or lightning round a bunch of questions to him that he has to politic and talk to death. He's even more brilliant when you give him 45 minutes in his office on a day where you're talking about his full body of work going all the way back to Volcano, a movie I watched many, many, many times as a child growing up.
What Volcano?
The Tommy Lee Jones NH Volcano movie? That was his first movie as a producer.
Wow.
He was working with Laura Shirley Donner and Donner Productions, and that was one of the first movies he worked on.
Wow.
He told the funny story of how he had to tell Tommy Lee Jones that they had actually worked together before when they were on the set of First Avenger. but, like, it is a really... It covers everything from his days at USC to his, you know, his time on Volcano, to his time on the X-Men movie and the Raimi movies, to, you know, the foundations of what Marvel Studio is and how it got there, two great comments, like, you know, we at Marvel are very committed to diversity. We are at the point now where almost half, if not more than half, of our staff is female. And he talks about how they're looking to promote producers. You know, Nate Moore, for example, from Black Panther, was somebody who had worked with Kevin for many years, and that was his first solo adventure as a solo producer. Yeah. And that they're going to start doing more of that. There are young people in the organization that he wants to get trained and wants to put them on their own projects so that they can run their own sets and be prepared to make their way in their own world. It is a really, really fantastic interview. It's about 30 to 45 minutes in length, covers all of Feige stuff, and he gives slight hints about, you know, as you said, the Fox deal. Oh, well, you know, we haven't been told that we can officially do anything, but, like, we've been told that we can start thinking about things, and so we're starting to think about things. And he doesn't dance around a lot of questions. The only question he really dances around is he gets to talking about the way that they've played with different genres, and he points specifically to the spy genre with Winter Soldier, which is a political thriller genre with Winter Soldier that they went around saying for months. People, cinema nerds, like to bash them for it because it's like, it's not really a political thriller. It's just in the vein of a political thriller. Why are they saying this? And you get down to technicalities and all that kind of crap. But the thing is, like, he gets asked a question about tones, and he gets asked if there are any kind of tones or genres that they haven't touched on yet that he's excited to touch on going forward. And he, like, full stops, like, I can't answer that because any way I answer that will send people into interpretations of what might be coming, and I am not going to go down that road. He basically does confirm that we've got two movies coming with female directors, and that's the thing that's going to happen, and that, you know, our 2020 slate's pretty much set.
Oh, okay.
And that kind of a thing. But, you know, it's a very, very good interview with him, and I think that in reality, the Fox deal is an interesting proposition because you go into you have so few content generators in the marketplace, and Disney is going to take up an even larger share now of the content space in the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And that's a truly disconcerting thing, because in a year, in a decade where we're talking about the 2020s, the roaring 20s, and we're talking about trying to get diverse and trying to bring in a progressive look at, you know, the world, and wanting to hire more women, wanting to hire more African Americans, wanting to hire more Latinos, looking to hire more Asians, like, telling stories from their perspective about their own story, their own backgrounds, their own heritages. To go from that to something that is ultimately, like, going to reduce the number of places that those people can get hired to tell those stories. You know, it's disconcerting. And the reason that it's mainly disconcerting to me is the fact that Bob Iger has essentially said that they did this deal because they needed more content for the streaming service, because they needed to be an adequate challenge for Netflix. Mm-hmm. And they didn't think that their library alone, which consists of all the Disney movies ever made, which consists of all the Star Wars movies ever made, all the Marvel movies ever made, all the Pixar movies ever made, all the Disney animation movies ever made, that wasn't a strong enough catalog to get people to pay $8.99 a month. So he wanted to go out and he wanted to purchase another studio to get more content, and it just so happened that they entered into negotiations, and, you know, they had to fight off Comcast, but they eventually got Fox. Because they wanted more content, and so now you can get all your Alien properties on the streaming service. You can get all of your Avatar stuff on the service. You can get all of your fill in the blank, your Blues Brothers, your you know, your Deadpool, your X-Men, your Fantastic Four content, your, you know, all of these kinds of things. And so, it's disconcerting to me because I feel that Disney is such a powerful brand name and has such a nostalgic pull to it, because let's not forget, also, they're bringing all the Disney Channel original content to this, mm-hmm. to this thing as well as producing original content for the service, including a Lady and the Tramp movie, and a Star Wars live-action television series, and Marvel live-action television series, and this, that, or the other thing. That would have been enough. You didn't have to go... Like, if Rupert wanted to hang this part of the business up, that's fine. I get it. But you didn't have to go and buy it. Like, your service was going to be a hit anyway.
I mean, I get it from a streaming... From a streaming idea, like, you know... Since a stream is, like, the idea would probably be you have never have enough content. But on the movie side... We're about to talk about 2019 as it is. There's what, just off the top of my head, there's like a 3 month span where all of the big movies that come out, and there's like four of them, they're all Disney, all of them. So like, they're gonna block off from like the beginning of March until June Disney movies. That's it. So not, and this is before the Fox deal, so they can wall off even more of the movie calendar.
Which technically, Dark Phoenix would probably end up being the first release of the Disney Fox deal now.
Oh, that movie. Because this got done so quick, I have serious doubts if that movie ever sees the light of day. It might. New Mutants dick. It's gone.
Which version of New Mutants, Chad?
I don't know. Until I just said that about Dark Phoenix, I forgot that New Mutants was a thing. New Mutants is done. Finished. It might show up on the streaming service, but that's it.
In which form? Because they've reshot the thing four times.
Whichever one Disney finds most palatable, so probably the first one? I don't know. That movie's confusing to me.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just going to be interesting, the space that we occupy here. So let's talk about 2018. Let's talk about the box office. Let's talk about, you know, the fact that Disney owns three of the top four slots in the best picture, in the best, in the year in box office, and next year's probably going to be more of the same. Mm-hmm. So let's start there. What are your impressions?
So I'm going to start with the most recent thing because it's really, really quite fresh. That is freaking Aquaman. Aquaman is only 2 weeks into release here in the U.S. It's been out overseas probably a couple more weeks than that. But I think it's right around $700 million as we talk right now. And the thought is that Aquaman could hit $1 billion. What's that? So
total gross to date, $188 million domestically.
Yeah.
On a $67 million opening... Currently sits at number 13 of the domestic box office, and that may not count this week's numbers.
So the best thing about this is $67 million opening. It only dropped to 51 this weekend. So the drop is minuscule. Normally you're looking at like a 50% drop. I'm not good at math, but that sounds like a 20-ish% drop, which is insane for a movie that big. So, that tells me that it's going to have legs. That it could come close to hitting $300 million here. If it hits $300 million here, it's hitting $1 billion. For sure. So...
It's pacing roughly $200 million. Tracking roughly $20 million behind Wonder Woman.
Okay. And I think it's already beaten out BVS, Justice League, Man of Steel worldwide already. So... If you go back and listen to us talk about this movie over the year, we didn't know really what to make of it. We thought James Wan, they were letting him do what he wanted to do. But we were saying again, after every WB release, it's like, will this be the movie to like shore it up? Because there's a good movie, then there's a bad movie. And I didn't, honestly, I thought Aquaman would be good. I just didn't think, I thought after Justice League, It would have killed most of the goodwill. And it is Aquaman, and you know everybody makes fun of Aquaman. So to see that this movie, of all the DC movies, could potentially hit $1 billion, is tracking well ahead of the best DC movie so far, which is Wonder Woman. I'm amazed that this is even happening. Now, with that comes the question of, what does WB learn from this? I don't know. If I had to guess, I try to be optimistic about most things, but when it comes to DCU, I'm like, it's the worst thing possible. Whatever the worst lesson they can learn from Aquaman, I think that's what it's going to be. That's just me speaking right now. You know, we'll see what happens. But I don't want to drift too far into that, because I can go on a whole tangent on DC. That tends to be my thing. That's what I ran on about. I'm not going to do that today. I'm just amazed that we're standing here today and Aquaman is, we worried that it was coming out with Bumblebee, Mary Poppins, and right after Spider-Man. And like, Aquaman is going to get buried. And in turn, it's burying everybody else. So I'm amazed that we're standing here right now with Aquaman doing what it's doing.
Currently sitting at $195 million. Again, these are projections from before the weekend. $195 million. The highest domestic gross is Wonder Woman.
I don't think it's doing that.
I'm surprised that we are in this place. But they made a good movie. They made a swashbuckling epic that is colorful and fun. Having seen the movie, I got bored with it. That first act is really slow, and it takes a while to get into the Indiana Jones pacing of it. The visuals are stunning. Mm-hmm. I mean, what Juan was able to do with men riding sharks and men riding, you know, seahorses, and the political intrigue and delving into the Game of Thrones type feel was very, very good. Momoa is very, very good at what he does. Amber Heard, you know, is trying her best. William Dafoe is being awesome as always. It's fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's not something that is going to grab my attention and make me rewatch it 3 times. But you know, it is a colorful, fun, funny DC movie, and I think you're going to get more of the same in 4 months when we get Shazam. You're going to get a colorful, fun, offbeat, barely connected movie. And then if you look at the upcoming releases, you've got Shazam in April, and then the Todd Phillips Joker movie in October, and then you don't have anything until next February, where you were supposed to have the long Birds of Prey title thingy.
Birds of Prey and that Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Right. That's what it is. Yeah. Which is a play on Birdman.
Yeah.
The Unexpected Nature of Virtues. Yeah.
Nobody's ever going to say that title, but that's...
We all just refer to it as Birdman.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got Empty Spaces in April and June of 2020, and, you know, the June 2020 spot obviously is taken up by Wonder Woman now. And then you've got a July movie for 2020. So, I mean,
we don't have, you know, names for most of these, but that's not a bad slate considering where we thought they were before Aquaman came out. So, you have 2 movies coming out next year. I'm still hesitant about Joker.
And then you've got 3 spots in 2020.
Yeah, but I think we'll find out what those are in short order. One of them
is Birds of Prey.
Well, they got Birds of Prey. We know that was coming out in February, so it's not like we don't have that gap between Justice League and Aquaman like we did this year.
Which was
like,
a reboot period. But you know, the thing is, like, at any point in that discussion, like, that movie was done. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of retooling or removing references or anything like that. So, I mean, like, this movie was being made at the time Snyder was doing his thing.
Yep.
So, like, this isn't like a reactionary thing. This is just like the movie James Wan wanted to make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Patty is making her movie. And the only reason that it got moved from 19 to 20 was because of the Guardians vacating their spot in summer 2020. So why would, as Jim pointed out in his conversation we had with him, why wouldn't you move to be the biggest movie of the summer, comic book movie of the summer?
Yeah, I mean, if any of them were to move to the summer, Wonder Woman has proven that that movie can be a summer movie. So there's nothing to be concerned at with that. I do question that July
2020.
Yeah, because if our boy Matt Reeves getting some gear, that's probably Batman's date, which is going to be interesting since it's going to be a month between Wonder Woman and Batman. But that's my guess for that one.
And if you can convince or want to stay with the Batfleck, he could make an appearance in that movie, and you could do a flashback movie the way you did with Wonder Woman. Because we've heard the rumors for how long that it's a year one movie. So, I mean,
If you're not, see, this is one of the things from the lessons they can learn. If you're not going to completely reboot everything, and I think Jason Momoa's Aquaman has made it hard, I don't think you don't muck with having a flashback. Just, if you're going to be done with Affleck, be done with Affleck, replace it with a new Batman, and move on. Now, the question is, do you keep everybody else hanging around? Namely, Henry Cavill. Before Aquaman, I know the train of thought was, the only credible thing that's worked has been Gal's Wonder Woman. You keep her, you can scrap the rest. Aquaman comes out, is doing gangbusters, is like, maybe they're like, so maybe it's not, maybe people are willing to forgive the faces associated with those movies if we give them
better stories. Movie.
So why scrap the people we already have if people are clearly still going to support them, and they're going to support them like they're doing for Aquaman and Wonder Woman. So I hope that's the lesson they learn. And then that means I hope that Danny Garcia gets together and stops strong-arming WB, and they come to a meeting of the minds.
You know that they did put out Donner Superman back in theaters for a little while this year.
Yeah, because it was the 40th year. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I thought about going, but I'm lazy.
So what do we make of this top 20 right here? I mean, what are some things that stand out to us? Because as we are sitting here in 2018.
So just by looking at the Box Office Mojo chart of the movies from this year by box office domestic. So just looking at it this way, the first thing that stands out is BV, BV, BV. BV means Buena Vista. Buena Vista means Disney. Those BVs are the top three domestically for the year. Disney has the top three movies domestically for the year. I'm sure it's the same. I know for sure it's the same for two of those internationally, because those two movies made over $1 billion and $2 billion apiece. So it just feeds in this whole thing we were just talking about. Disney is kind of ruling the roost when it comes to the movies, because even so, on this, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Half of the top 10 is Disney. The other two would be 8 and 9, which would be Ant-Man and the Wasp, and surprise, surprise, Solo. Solo came in the top 10 of the movies in 2018. Solo, the movie that has been destroyed, eviscerated since it came out, is still the top 10 domestically on the list.
$213 million domestically. On an $80 million opening weekend.
So, one that tells me
$84 million opening weekend.
So, really looking at this list of first, like, what jumps out to me is,
but you see what's about to pass it?
What it? It can't pass it. Because I don't know if the theatrical run is done, but it should be close to done, because I was walking in Target and I saw Tom Hardy's Venom face plastered everywhere. Number 10 is Venom, you know, the movie I just don't want to talk about. But this shows me the value of getting to, hell, $200 million, not even three. Because most movies, let's see, of the top 10, One, two.
The top 11 are all over 200 million.
Yeah, but the top five are the only ones above 300 million.
Right.
So getting 200 million is an achievement. I know in the circles we're in, when you start talking about box office and you say 200 million, it's kind of looked at as a, like, it's frowned upon. But looking at this one, there's only five movies domestically that made over 300 million. And really, only 11 total that's made over 200 million. Getting there is impressive. Now, you start talking about budgets of movies and all that stuff. Okay, yeah, I get it. But just making that amount in the box office is a feat, and people shouldn't devalue it as much.
Okay, so here's some things that I think about when I look at this list. First and foremost would be that the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has to be extremely happy with this list, because it means that when A Star Is Born wins Best Picture in 6 weeks, or 8 weeks at the Academy Awards, no one can claim that it's a small movie that no one ever saw. Currently, A Star Is Born, which has been re-released a couple of times now in the IMAX format with Bradley Cooper and
Lady Gaga,
is sitting currently at $201 million domestically.
Yep, that goes into the total. Only so many make over $200 million. I was surprised to see it that high.
And is only $12 million different from the movie that opened the same weekend as it did, Venom.
That's right, they did open the same weekend.
They opened the same weekend, and they're both number 10 and number 11 on the box office chart for the year. So, no, first and foremost, that's what I take away from this. The Academy is going to be very happy, because this is not a movie. The movie that's going to win Best Picture of the Year for them is not a movie that is in the 300s in the terms of the total box office for the year. It is a film that is very popular, very widely known, got a wide release. The theater count, was, you see here,
Star Is Born.
3,904.
It's pretty good.
So, I mean, that's not a small movie.
Yeah.
So, they're very happy about that. The next thing that I would point out about this list are some very pleasant surprises that I don't think when we were sitting here last January 1st, we really could have thought about. One would be The Meg. The Meg was a small August release that no one... It felt very much to me like Piranha 3D, which was an August release that had Christopher Lloyd in it and Richard Dreyfuss in a small cameo. It was goofy and fun and over the top and very hyperly sexualized. And, made money that August. The Meg making money, and particularly making money in the States as well as China, where it was made and financed and all of that,
of course,
is a surprise. I'd also think that the fact that Crimes of Grindelwald did not crack the top 10 is going to be very disconcerting to Warner Brothers going forward, because Joe Rowling has four more of these to go. Three more of these to go. As of now, Crimes of Grindelwald is sitting at $156 million on a $76 million opening. You'd have to look at the international numbers, but just speaking domestically, and Harry Potter movies do really well in Britain and Europe, so they may have saved themselves there, but it's really... You have to wonder if we're entering into Transformers territory where there's just not a huge enough fandom in the States to support another three movies. But we'll see where they go. But that is a surprise to me. As is the film above it. Halloween is on my top 10 list for the year. Far surpassed anybody's expectations. The fact that David Gordon Green and Daniel... and Danny Green.
Yeah.
Danny McBride.
That's it.
That Danny McBride and David Gordon Green could make a Halloween movie that could honor the spirit of the original, bring Michael Myers back, bring Jamie Lee Curtis's character back, could do the whole thing again and get people reinvented and re-sparked to the mythology and to the character. Is really a surprise, and the fact that the movie has made almost $160 million domestic is a huge surprise and a great thing for me that I think will really benefit, because I think with it, Chapter 1 has kind of set the world on fire for some good horror movies. as you can clearly see by this listing, A Quiet Place is sitting there at number 14, which is a breakout movie of the year. Further down on the list, Hereditary. You have Hereditary further down the list, which, you know, was a huge surprise movie as well. So, like, horror in 2017 and 2018 is really picking up, and especially unique horror movies like Bird Box, like A Quiet Place, that are really starting to pick up and gain momentum. So that's the surprise to me. Crazy Rich Asians was a huge surprise. Yeah. For as popular as that book was, no one knew, you know, what the box office is. A Black Panther type situation where, you know, we knew it was going to be big, but we didn't know it would be that big. Another surprise to me would be that some of the films that, you know, no one really thought would be that good, and they are still on this list. Venom would fall into that category. Yeah. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is one of the worst reviewed movies of the year, and it is sitting at number 4. You know, and of course, Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, somewhere Bryan Singer is collecting checks for Bohemian Rhapsody as the sole director after being fired by the family of Freddie Mercury off the film.
I forgot Fallen Kingdom even came out, because I didn't even see it, because I heard so much terrible things about it. I just ignored it. And I'm looking at it on the list, but I just keep glossing over it. So that's how much I think of it. But yeah, it's number 4. It's made a good bit of money here. 416.
And for the record, Deadpool, Once Upon a Deadpool, and Deadpool 2 have separate listings.
They do?
They do. So the Once Upon a Deadpool money did not go toward Deadpool 2's box office number.
Because they said it was.
I looked this afternoon. Box Office Mojo has a separate listing on the box office chart for Once Upon a Deadpool.
I think it's for the studio at all costs is one. But,
right.
You know, whatever for that.
But I mean, you know, you and I both lived through the Deadpool phenomenon in a couple of Februaries ago.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like this one made as big of an impact or a mark, and yet it's still sitting there at number 5 for the year. I mean, Ryan Reynolds is, you know, it's got to be extremely happy, and Drew Goddard's got to be really, really, like, nervous right now, because he's again tied to a movie that may or may not ever get to happen.
That one might get to happen. Yeah, because every time I hear people talk about Deadpool's box office, they talk about it in terms of it being disappointing compared to the first. But yeah, when you think about it in regards to this, it's a win.
How can you say that Goddard doesn't have anything to worry about when there's the Ryan Reynolds Deadpool that has been successful has been an R-rated Deadpool movie? In the PG-13 watered-down Once Upon a Deadpool they put out to prove to Disney that they could make it work as a PG-13 entity has failed miserably. It is in the 200s. So how can you say that when Drew Goddard's Bad Times at El Royale, Cabin in the Woods, you know, he wrote The Martian but he didn't direct it, those are all like R-rated things, you know. How, and Deadpool is certainly an R-rated thing under Ryan Reynolds, so why isn't Disney going to reevaluate that when they take it over and say, look, maybe we need to draw back on these Deadpool plans?
So, I didn't see Once Upon a Deadpool, and I think the reason the box office for that suffered is probably...
Fred Savage?
No, not even because I thought the framing device, everything I've heard about it, is really, really clever, but it's like, I don't want to see Deadpool. I don't want to go back to the theater to see that. When I know, like, in a month or two, they're going to release that cut. I've seen Deadpool 2. I don't need to see this one on the big screen. The cut probably works, and I'm curious to see it, to see if it does work, to if that is a proving ground for Disney. I think Kevin Feige is a very smart guy. And I think he doesn't want to... I don't think he would completely scrap things that have proven to work. With minimal effort. I mean, the most effort they put into Deadpool, the first one, was convincing Fox to to make the damn thing in the first place. They made that on a shoestring budget, and it did gangbusters. Deadpool 2, they put more money into it. It didn't do as well, but again, as we're seeing, it's number 5 on this list. It works. Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool works. So you find a way to make that work if you're Disney. I don't think you scrap the whole thing. I don't know what they viewed, how they viewed Drew Goddard, but
they wanted to work with him multiple times, so I don't think that's the issue.
Yeah, so
I think the issue is fitting an X-Force movie in when you're now going to purely be owned by Disney in an MCU situation, coming off of 2 sequels that they can't really own. So
I don't know what they'll do, but I don't think they scrap Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool. And if that X-Force is even fathomable, Andrew Goddard still wants to stay on with it, I think they'll find a way to make it work. It might be the last Fox project that they actually let happen because they want it to work. So that's why I think he doesn't have as much to worry about. Any other? Okay, I'm my last thing to say about this list before we go into the new year. Last January, I'm pretty sure we both would have said Infinity War is your box office champion. And internationally, that is the case. However, domestically, long live the king, may he reign, and Black Panther at number one.
By a full $18 million.
Yeah. The fact that it's even there. Like, again, I knew it was going to make money. If I had to guess last year and put it on the top 10 list, domestically, I probably would put it about 5. But for it to be number one, to make $700 million just here, is, if anybody told you they knew that was coming, they're a goddamn liar. I'm just gonna call you that right now. But it was a phenomenon. I'm glad that I got to see this happen. There was so much goodwill and good things around that movie. It's hard to believe that that movie came out in 2018, because it just feels like it was so long ago. But
every day feels like a very long day in 2018,
2019. I know it's gone, but then when I think back on it, like, damn, Black Panther was this year. It just don't feel like
that's
it.
What happens when you're putting together a top 10 list for the end of the year, and you're going through the list, and you're going looking at all the movies that you watched this year or that you came out this year, and you're like, there was a Paddington movie that came, a Paddington movie that came out.
I forgot, and I see, like, it's on HBO now. I've seen it. I know that it came up this year, but it was not until I put eyes on that list, like, damn, that did come up this year. That movie's also really good. I'm disappointed that it's not on the list that we can see as of right now, but Paddington is adorable. I love him. If you have not seen either one, watch them. Don't even matter which one. They are both equally good. Watch Paddington.
My last takeaway from this would be that Benedict Cumberbatch is got to be smiling somewhere, because his version of the Grinch, which everybody has said is nowhere near as good as the Jim Carrey version from 18 years ago, has landed at number 6 and could perceivably climb to number 5, possibly.
I think that's a long shot.
But that's a movie like you hear no one talking about. Like, Ralph Breaks the Internet was the bigger release in November, animated-wise. And yet, The Grinch is, you know, above it.
Yeah, there are 3 animated movies on this top 10 list. Ralph Breaks the Internet is actually number 15. It's the lowest of the 3.
Well, the 17 is Hotel Transylvania, 3, Summer Vacation.
Okay, so there's 4. Okay, there's 4 on the list that we can see right here. It's Transylvania 17, Ralph 15, The Freaking Grinch at 6, and Incredibles at number 3. It's the same studio, so this fits. This is the whole Despicable Me thing. Like, it comes out of nowhere and just kind of sits there and just starts eating up stuff. And at the end of the year, you're like, where have you been and why are you so big? And that's what The Grinch is.
The accumulator. The guy who just keeps playing and playing and eventually piles up enough statistics to be in the Hall of Fame.
That's what this is. Now, I've seen The Grinch. My daughter has seen it twice. She doesn't typically go see movies more than once in a theater. she made me take her to see The Grinch. That's why I saw it. So, on the Karen scale, it's good. For me, to your comparison of the 2001, I can't do that because I've never seen the 2000 version of The Grinch. As I've discussed on Twitter, this is clearly an age divide. Because people my age, when it came out, we were in college. And when that movie came out, it got crapped on. Something fierce. Nobody liked that thing. It was god-awful, according to everything I ever heard about it. But people that were younger than me, it's The Grinch they grew up with. So much so, I've seen so many people put this as, like, their number one on a Christmas list. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Wait, you're 20, you just got off the bottle. That's why you put that on there. Okay, I get it. But I can't make that comparison. I can just say that I enjoyed it. I will watch it again for Christmas time. I have no problems watching it again for Christmas time. And their version of a mean one, while when you hear it the first time, it sounds like sacrilege, is really catchy, and I have found myself listening to it while driving without my daughter.
I thought it was kind of the equivalent of the redo of the Ghostbusters theme for Paul Feig's Ghostbusters. Like, they used both the original and they used the remix version.
See, the one they put, the Fallout Boy one from that Ghostbusters, that thing is trash. Now, I think there's another one that they play, well, I mean, besides the original, that sounds closer to the original, that I'm like, I can kind of get down with. The mean one is closer, is not the Fallout Boy version of Ghostbusters, because that is trash.
Everything Fallout Boy related in the 2000s. In the 2010s is not great.
You said that and not me. I'm not getting anybody in my mentions over Fallout Boy. I just said, that particular song is trash. Brian is the one that dug him a grave. At him.
It's okay. I mean, we're getting Maroon 5 playing the Super Bowl in Atlanta. I mean,
I have no problem with Maroon 5.
Chad, it's 2019. It's not 2004. Granted, this is bringing things forward. I mean, we don't have the Rolling Stones.
That's what I'm saying. You dig them suckers out the grave, and nobody complains about them. You put Maroon 5 out there, like, it's 2019. So, the Rolling Stones are literally sitting in the crypt and, like, come play the Super Bowl. Sure thing, sonny. And they climb out their grave and they come up on the stage. But Maroon 5, that's the dudes that's like maybe 10 years older than me, y'all gonna crucify them for coming on the Super Bowl stage. Come on. Just give them a little
in Atlanta,
leeway.
The home of hip-hop and R&B.
Now, that is a legitimate argument, because if you say it's in Atlanta, the first, last, and only thing that should be acceptable is Outkast. Outkast is the show. They tell you no, you back up a Brinks truck to their house. They tell you no again, you back up another one. And I know this, and this is a Super Bowl thing, they don't pay their acts to be on there. But goddammit, you pay them. You keep backing up trucks until they say, fine, well, I can't get out of my house.
Technically, Pepsi pays for whoever's
even
going
better. You got the money, pay them. No, it's Atlanta. You pay Outkast to show up on a stage and bring all their friends, and y'all just tear it up. And just pray for the best, censors. I'm going to enjoy it. I don't know how much the sponsors are going to enjoy it, but that's what you should do.
If Kendrick Lamar can do a decent job in the freezing cold of Atlanta last year during the national championship.
Kendrick is in a whole different thing, because Kendrick's in a different part of his career. Outkast is another part of their career where they're like, they're cemented. They're like, you're going to get what we're going to give you, and you might not like it, but you're going to take it. So Kendrick is not, he could do that, but he's not in that space. But
all I want to say is thank you, Janet Jackson, because this is what we've had to deal with for the last 12 years.
We will not besmirch the name of Janet Jackson. It's not her fault. It's if we're going to throw her out, we're throwing out Justin with it too. But he's been on the Super Bowl stage since then. So F him, and F the people that decided to put him back on there after he was complicit. I mean, the thing that tears self off, it didn't just magically fall off altogether. She didn't press a button to fall. No, he did it. He got to go too. Bastards.
Island of Misfit Toys. So let's move on to 2019. As we look at what has traditionally been the dumping ground of cinema, the month of January. What do you see on here that is your most, you know, something that you were looking forward to in January of 2019?
Not a goddamn thing.
Okay. So, I'm actually looking forward to a few things. Number one would be Escape Room. Escape Room intrigues me because this looks very much like Cabin in the Woods.
I just saw a commercial for that today.
I've seen three trailers for this. It plays in front of pretty much every movie I go to see. It literally feels like a Cabin in the Woods, the Drew Goddard version and Whedon version from a couple years ago.
I have to admit, but keep going.
The Fahrenheit 451. Glass.
That's the one I need to I missed that.
I need somebody to do a triple feature where you play Unbreakable, Split,
and Glass.
And then Glass all back to back. Because I think that would be a really cool way to get the entire story, because it's been 20 years since Glass, almost. Unbreakable. So, you know, and that was before superhero movies were cool.
Yeah.
So, that, I think, would be a really good one. I'm interested to see, because the only reason I have any hope for it is because Jason Blum and Blumhouse are still the producers. They're still the ones in control of the budget. They're still the ones who can look Shyamalan in the eye and say, no. No, sir. You do not get to go overboard and do this crazy, wacky thing that you want to do. No, sir. And here is your budget. You do not go $1 over. You do not go $1 under. This is your budget. Please get it in on time. Get it on budget. And let's get it out in theaters.
He did an interview. I didn't read it. But the gist of what I saw from the interview was that he understands his downfalls from before. And it sounds like he's humbled himself enough to understand that and progress from it. So I have hope for him.
He recovered while he was in director's jail, unlike other people. Namely, Mel Gibson, who, like, you know, insults all kinds of Jewish people, then gets funding to make movies again, and, you know, still makes the same kind of movies he was making before, bloody and violent.
That's because people like that. I mean, Lethal Weapon, and we're giving them a pass because they're stupid.
So, I'm really looking forward to Escape Room. I'm really looking forward to Glass. I'm also surprisingly interested in The Kid Who Would Be King.
I figured you'd say that.
Just simply because I like Athenian legend stuff, and yes, it's going to be a stupid retelling, but I have a soft spot in my heart for A Kid in King Arthur's Court from the 90s, and this could potentially be that for a young generation. So, I'm down with it. You know, if you like the Diary for a Wimpy Kid movies, if you like some of the stuff Nickelodeon Films has been putting out in the last 3 to 5 years, so to speak, I think you're going to like this. So that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm also looking forward to Serenity, which is a small film that isn't getting a whole lot of marketing material, which could end up hurting it, but it's a Fantasy Island type take with Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway. And you get those two on the screen at the same time, sign me up. And you give me those two in a sci-fi premise. I went and saw Passengers with because it had freaking Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence in a sci-fi concept. Sold. Like, I will go see this movie just to see what it is. It probably won't make a whole lot of money, though, because, you know, marketing. We're less than a month away from the film and no one knows it exists except for a stand-in or in a theater. So that is what I'm looking forward to in January. If you are a dog lover, Dog's Way Home is very sweet and adorable. This is also my opportunity to remind you that Alpha is now on DVD.
What?
And can be owned in your home.
What?
At any point.
Who wants that?
It's actually in the top 20. It's in the top 100 of the box office. It made the top 100.
It's because parents need something to bring kids to, and that was just a thing. Damn you for bringing up that stupid movie. I keep forgetting about you. You're the only reason that comes up again.
Alpha and Geostorm. These are things.
My daughter's trying to plot to take me to see A Dog's Way Home because she wants to go see it. I refuse. I don't want to see it. Besides, if you've seen the trailers, you know exactly how this movie goes. Act 1, 2, 3.
Yes. Always. But I see it and I think Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey.
With the big CG cat? The big CG puma, the dog with friends? I don't want to see that. I don't need to know that. I'm trying to talk her in to go and see it with her grandparents and leave me out of this. But she's kind of insistent. She might want to see a kid in King Arthur, the kid who would be king, so I might see that. I've seen trailers for that everywhere. I think it'll be entertaining, so I'm not opposed to that. But yeah, the only one I want to see out of this is Glass.
All right, let's then move to February. What on in February are you looking forward to? What are you interested in February?
So we're going to go with Lego Movie 2 off top. That's going to be top one. How to Train Your Dragon 3, which, interesting note, I've seen all of those, but I've never seen any of them in the theater. That's probably going to change this year. And two that I'm just intrigued by, but I am not stepping foot to see them because I am not a glutton for punishment, unlike some people I know, which would be What Men Want.
Which, funny enough, we brought up Mel Gibson earlier.
Exactly.
And right? is the female take on the 2000 movie starring Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt What Women Want.
I still don't think a lot of people realize that that's what that is. And that's the only reason I'm intrigued by this, because I've seen What Women Want. I've actually seen it again rather recently, and I like it.
By the way, another fun fact about Kevin Feige, he was also a producer on You've Got Mail.
Nice! I would have never saw that either. I'm going to have to go look at his filmography, because this is interesting. But I don't think What Men Want is going to be good. I'm just intrigued because it's taking that premise, which I thought was interesting, and applying it to the opposite sex. And the second one is Alita Battle Angel. Because this movie, much like Mortal Engines, kept getting kicked around. And it seems like they changed physically what she looks like to be more palatable to people, because she was very anime with the very big eyes and it was weirding people out. I think they kind of shrunk that in. But because of that, and because it's in February,
and they pushed the release date back 3 times.
I think it's going to bomb horribly. I just want to see what people's perceptions of it are, particularly people that are fans of this, the IP, and people that are fan of anime in general. What do they think of the movie? So those are the ones I'm intrigued that I'm never going to see. Lego Movie 2, I'm not as excited as I was I'm probably as excited for Lego Movie 2 as I was when I first heard about the Lego Movie in general. Because I was not excited with that movie at all until I saw a trailer, and then I was this might be something. I think Lego Movie 2 is going to be good. I don't know if it's going to be like a Lego movie. And it'll be interesting to see. Lego has been on a downward slope. Lego Movie started real high. And Batman
did okay. And then Ninjago
fell off a cliff. Now, Lego Batman was still good. I've never seen Ninjago, so I have no idea. But it's on a downward trajectory. So we'll see if it upticks to what.
And you notice they've been labeling that from the writers of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
As they should, because that movie's a goddamn masterpiece and should win Oscars. Plural. You hear me? I'm saying it right now. Plural. If it's nominated for, a big picture, I'm not going to argue with that either. But yeah, you damn right you lean into that. They did this one, they ain't going to do that one. We're going to ride this wave. I think it'll be tied between that and How to Train Your Dragon. Which one of those is going to win the month? It'll be one of those two. And How to Train Your Dragon, those are just, people don't talk about them a lot, but they're just well made and people like them. So it's going to do fine. I think it's going to be good. It's just a question of how much does it make.
Okay, so a few things that stand out to me about this list here. One is, of course, Lego Movie 2. As you stated, for all the reasons that you stated, it's is this a franchise? Is it not a franchise? It's been 4 years, it's been 5 years now. The first movie was 2014.
That's right.
So, you've got a set of kids who were 4 or 5 now, who are 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
Are they still going to want to come back and see everything is awesome? I like the fact they're going with a Mad Max kind of vibe for it. I think that's really interesting and really cool. And I like the voice cast that they've got set up for it. I like the premise. And, I think that Lord Miller can do a fantastic job with anything they do. not worried about it. I think it'll do really, really well. I'm interested in Happy Death Day 2. I found Happy Death Day to be hilarious and fun in the Final Destination way, where, like, it's campy, it's funny, it's unintentionally hilarious, and Happy Death Day 2 just looks just that much more wacky and just that much more fun. So I am totally down for some more Happy Death Day. How to Train Your Dragon, what I like about that is the fact they're tying the television series in two, so they are really, like, wrapping everything up with this one movie, which makes perfect sense when you know about the history of DreamWorks Animation and how bad they've been over the last, financially, over the last 5 years, and the layoffs and the delays, yeah, and trying to fix, you know, the problems over there. You know, so this has been their mainstay. This has been their Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
And to see them bundle this up is something I'm really going to be interested to see, because they acknowledge that the TV series exists and that it's in canon, and they place this after that, and it ties up things from that finale, and it ties up things from the previous two movies, and I really like what they have the potential to do there. What Men Want, I like where they're putting it, but I also like the fact that they're going with the, what I call the Aaron Andrews effect, which is, Aaron Andrews has struggled for a very long time, especially post-stalking incident, with making it in a, you know, what is considered a predominantly male world. One of the things, so I'm a big fan of the small TV show that aired in the 90s called Sports Night. It was a SportsCenter takeoff, kind of based on what was going on behind the scenes at ESPN in those days. In the very first episode, and this might have been part of the reason why the show was ahead of its time, the show was dealing with locker room culture toward female reporters. The pilot episode was dealing with this kind of a thing. And so I like what her deal is that she feels, in order to get ahead in her field, she needs to know what the men are thinking so that she can think more like them, so she can act more like them, so that she can get promoted. And so I think that's a very interesting angle to take in 2019, in the culture and the climate that we're in, that we can examine that through this kind of a film, which you know, I think is really important.
I agree with that. That's a good take.
So, I mean, there's not really a whole lot else. You get your generalized romantic comedies for Valentine's Day. The Prodigy actually looks really compelling and interesting. I'm glad Orion is a thing again, and they're back to making movies. Anybody from the 80s and 90s will remember that banner. So, you know, I think that's going to be interesting, but there isn't just, in January and February, unlike previous years, it doesn't feel like there's anything that's massive that's just going to blow up, and, like, by the time we're sitting here a year from now, we're going to remember, you know, anything that
comes. Yeah, I'm surprised there's not more stuff in February, considering the last two have had the surprise box office champions.
All right. So let's move into March. This is the beginning of the spring corridor, the beginning of the dominance of the House of Mouse. Your thoughts on what you see in March and what you're looking at, and your thoughts and feelings on it.
So I'm gonna go ahead and get this out of the way. Tyler Perry's got a movie coming out in March. If you like Tyler Perry, you're gonna go see it. I have no idea what this one's about. I think this is one where Madea dies. I don't know. But, you know, it's going to be there.
You think, Chad, the movie's entitled Madea Family Funeral.
See, I know he's retiring it, but I think he's doing this play tour first, which will grace our city this year. And then I think the movie happens, which will probably be next year. So I don't think this is it, but it might be. Who knows? Whatever. Before I get to the big ones, Us. A movie that I'm never, ever going to see. Because I don't do horror, I'm a coward. That's fine. The trailer for Us just dropped, like,
Christmas Day.
Yeah. Us is the next movie from Jordan Peele. It stars, I cannot remember his real name right now, but he is M'Baku in Black Panther. And,
god dang it. Daniel Kaluuya?
No, not Daniel Kaluuya. It's, dang it, I cannot remember his name. Big 6'5" guy. I cannot remember his name, and Lupita Nyong'o is them two. I won't describe the trailer for you because I don't really know what the hell is going on in it. It looks creepy enough that I'm never going to see this again. But I want to see what the reception is to his second movie and if people feel about it the way they felt about Get Out. So that's my... I'm wondering about that. Never set a foot in the scene. Just not going to happen. Now, the month starts and ends with the House of Mouse. It's bookending March. You got Captain Marvel coming out March 8th. Got Dumbo coming out March 29th. We all know I'm going to be in there to see Captain Marvel. I don't really say anything about anything else about it. I think if it does like Doctor Strange numbers, you're in the clear. Dumbo is something I'm more interested in because I have no idea about this movie. None. Since this has been announced, when you say Tim Burton's Dumbo, I've always said, I don't understand how this is going to work. The only thing that I saw working, I've said it repeatedly, is the drunk elephant. The big blue, the big purple bubble elephants from his drunken dream. I knew that Tim Burton, that's his playland. That's what he lives for. The rest of the movie, but we've since seen the elephant. He's cute and adorable. It seems to be hitting the same beats where Dumbo gets separated from his mother. People are sad about it. They don't like it. and then they have to deal with that. We now have human beings to deal with in the form of Colin Farrell and his two kids and the ringmaster, who is Danny DeVito, again in the Tim Burton movie, again wearing a top hat. It's like Tim Burton likes doing that to Danny DeVito. And Michael Keaton's in this movie as, I guess, somebody wants to buy the circus. I don't know. All that to say, visually, what we've seen so far, it looks like a Disney Dumbo movie. It's just Tim Burton that is like, I don't know if he's going to be able to drive this train, because his last few have not been stellar.
Okay. So there are a few things here that I want to point out. Obviously, we'll get to the big ones that we've been talking about on this podcast for a while. I want to point out first and foremost, I want to start with what will be the biggest flop of the month of March and might be one of the biggest flops of the year to this point when we get to March. That one right there, The Captive State.
What the hell is it?
This is that creepy movie with the football stadium and the starship passing over it and Forrest Whitaker and all these crazy things that you've seen trailers for, I'm sure. Probably. Or maybe it's because I go to the movies so much I see these trailers that no one else sees. I've seen like 3 trailers for Captive State. It looks like a dystopian sci-fi movie that, if I'm honest, you could put together a really neat like viral marketing campaign for that would have happened at like the Super Bowl and people would have lined up out the door to see it because they would have wondered what the hell it was. It will flop. No one knows that it's coming. No one knows what it is. You could watch the trailers and you know that it's dystopian sci-fi.
But
that's going to be the biggest flop. I'm very interested in Where'd You Go, Bernadette, just because, you know, I like Linkletter stuff. I'm very interested in Us, obviously, with Jordan Peele, and seeing what's going to go on there. I'm also interested in The Aftermath, because I'm a big Fox Searchlight fan, and I'm also a huge A24 fan. They've been doing some really great stuff, so Climax would also be something I would be interested in. Those kinds of movies don't get wide releases. One movie that does get a good wide release that I think is underestimated is Wonder Park. That cute little animation movie with the uglies going into Perfectionville and Kelly Clarkson singing songs.
That's not Wonder Park.
No, Wonder. It's right. Wonder Park is the one with the roller coaster that she does the crayons for, and then throws her sets away and does the whole like I'm too grown up for this thing, and it comes to life.
Yeah,
That, you know, that could actually be a real...
No
attraction?
I've seen this trailer, because the last few movies I've gone to has just been me and my daughter, and I've seen this trailer with her, and that one doesn't register at all. The Ugly Dolls, the one you talked about before, she's like at least intrigued about that. Intrigued enough to say, like, make mention that she might want to see it. This one, nothing.
So, where are we on, like, the Captain Marvel box office? Because you know the expectations will be outsized due to what happened with Black Panther.
Okay, so if they're going to compare it to Black Panther or Wonder Woman, I don't think that's fair at all. I think we're looking more along the lines of Doctor Strange, which made about, I want to say like 630, something like that. I think that is more in line with where Captain Marvel is going to end up. If it does anything over that, great, it's lying, y'all. But it's not doing 8, and it's certainly not doing a billion. And neither should it. And I don't think Marvel's expecting that. Just do a good one, get it out there, and then you can set higher expectations if it's well received and you make a sale. I think that's all you can expect from Captain Marvel. It is the first one. I just keep seeing the Wonder Woman thing creep into there, like you can't have because Wonder Woman did this, Captain Marvel's got to do that. I don't think that's the case at all. Wonder Woman is the pinnacle woman, female superhero. Captain Marvel, quite frankly, came to her peak within the last
20 years. Four-ish
year, not like really,
yeah.
Pure dear Captain Marvel, probably the last 10. You can't compare that. So
let's look here. We pulled up the MCU box office. So your highest opening, your highest grossing movie to date is Black Panther. Right below it is Infinity War. 700 is 678. So where in the top 19, so there have been 20 films so far.
Mm-hmm.
The lowest down here is at 19, at $176 million for Captain America, the First Avenger. You said Iron Man, you said... Doctor Strange money, which we put it at $232 million domestic, $85 million opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You believe those numbers are correct, or you feel that the Black Panther numbers of 202 opening weekend are...
Black Panther made over $100 million first weekend.
$200 million.
That's right. Hell no. Not happening. Not even close.
It's a cultural moment for women. Wonder Woman did big numbers too.
But she's not the cultural milestone that Wonder Woman is. She's the cultural milestone for comic book fans that know Captain Marvel. Wonder Woman is the cultural milestone for women because they all know who Wonder Woman is. So, yeah, I think high-end would be what the Guardian numbers, which was around, the first Guardian numbers, which was around 333 for domestic Q.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is perfectly fine. I think that's the high-end for Captain Marvel. The 285 Doctor Strange had, I think, that is completely respectable.
Put you in the middle of the pack.
Yeah. I mean, and this, there are 19 of these things.
20.
There's 20 of these things. Most of them are going to come in. In the middle, they're not all going to be sky. That's kind of what happens. Some on the lower end, you get your Ant-Man's, you got your Black Panthers on the end, and then you got the middle where most of them live.
Here's my most intriguing question about Marvel in 2019. How far after Endgame do we get an announcement and officially confirm this is what we're doing for 2020? I don't expect them to go past 2020, but I expect them to at least confirm what's coming for 2020 because they're going to have to market it. So, can they wait till July at Comic-Con or D23 in August?
I mean, why not? I mean, after Endgame, I don't think we'll get a cliffhanger ending. Whatever we get in 2020 is not going to be an Avengers movie. I think
we'll get a bow put on everything, and then a post-credit stinger will tease what's coming, hence the reason why we did Thanos at the end of the first Avengers movie.
Yeah. But I don't think any of those movies in 2020 are going to deal with that stinger, so why not wait until Comic-Con? Like, we took Comic-Con off last year, wait till you see what we got this year, and then just blow everybody away. But I don't think we get... I don't think we get more than just the 2020 slate. We might get 2021, but I think they're going to just stick with these are the ones coming out next year. You'll find out what's coming out the year after that next year.
Okay. So let's move on to April. What do you see in April that is of note?
I forget they're remaking Pet Sematary. Again, never going to see it, but all power to you. And then there is Hellboy, which, I mean, I saw the trailer for. I thought it was, you know, okay. It's not something I'm running out to see. Missing Link. That is Laika. And that is why I'm looking forward to that. I didn't know it was a thing until last week, and then I saw Laika, and I'm like, I've liked everything else you've done so far.
You've seen the big standees or the...
Yeah. I saw the trailer before I saw the standee. So, because it's Laika, I want to see it. It's probably not going to make a lot of money, but...
Especially after what our good friend Mr. Knight did for your Bumblebee.
Yes, he gave me Optimus Wrecking Shop, and I love him for it. So, anything Laika, I'll go see. Now, just like March had bookend movies, April has bookend movies, even though it's kind of weighted towards the end. We get our next DC movie, which is Shazam. I'm looking forward to that because... You know, I like the character. Then this whole dynamic of Superman meets Big. And it's, for everything we've seen, it looks fun and bright and everything that DC has not been up until Aquaman. So, this is... And they can finally, like, hopefully put together a chain of movies that people like back to back. Because they haven't done that so far. It's always been a good movie, a divisive movie, a good movie, a movie people hate. So now is the time that they can put two of them back to get back that people like, build up the goodwill, and then, you know, then the future doesn't look so damn bleak for DC all of a sudden for a while. And then we get to the last week in February, which is going, I mean, yeah, in April, which brings us Endgame. Yeah, we're going to see it. It's going to make a whole bunch of money. The question is it going to be Infinity War? I don't know. I don't care. We all going to go see it. I don't even have to say that much about it. There's nothing else to say about this movie. We know next to nothing about it, except we know there's not time travel because they told us they're using stuff from Civil War. That's all we know. We know Scott's out the damn shrunken place. That's it. That's all I got to say about Endgame. It's going to make all the money. It's probably going to be your winner for the year.
Nope.
Certainly going to be the winner for the month.
That's what I was going to say. You don't think Shazam
I forget what comes out at the end of the year. Yeah. So
it'll be second, but unless fanboys have a conniption fit and boycott.
Oh, you know, like normal fanboys?
Yeah. But so you're saying that Shazam or Pet Sematary or Hellboy don't have enough to overtake the conclusion of the Marvel Cinematic Universe as we know it?
All three of them together. They can't even light a match to this movie. It's over. There's a reason why. I mean, how Hellboy comes out the 12th, which is, what, 2 weeks before that? There's a reason there's nothing big that comes out between Hellboy and Endgame. You put Missing Link in there because it's a nice kiss movie, but there's nothing else there. Why? We're going to give them space. Give them the front half, give them the back half, devour it. Just eat it all up. So, yeah. I ain't got nothing to say about the damn movie.
So, the Hellboy reboot is going to be interesting because it's not Del Toro, and it looks interesting and weird, and David Harbour is kind of got a dad bod following now after after Stranger Things. But I like the concept. I think they could do some really interesting things in a universe where comic book movies are big now. You don't have, you know, Del Toro was making that still in an environment where those were shady propositions. Shazam looks fun. It looks big. It looks happy. It looks bright. It looks everything we want it to be. And Pet Sematary is, you know, King adaptations.
Yeah.
It's a thing. It's going to be a thing now. Whether it be on Netflix or Amazon or in the theaters, you're going to get more King adaptations following the success of it. That's just the way that works.
Yep.
Yeah, the next thing that I wanted to bring your attention to there, it would be Under the Silver Lake, which I, again, a huge A24 fan. I'm very interested in seeing this movie. I think it could be a sneaky good movie that ends up on, like, Suspensia. It ends up on people's top 10 list, but no one goes to see until it's on DVD, and they go, like, whoa, why did this we not see this? That could be a really compelling one. There's a movie coming out that I need you to Google, because I don't know whether it's in March or April, but it stars the bigger girl from This Is Us, and it's a purely Christian conservative movie.
Oh, God.
where her son gets trapped under a lake and nearly dies and is actually pronounced dead, and then she lays hands on him and prays, and then he comes back to life and stays in a coma for a little while longer, and the whole community is affected, and it's like a whole Christian conservative thing. That's like supposed to be, you know, around Easter, but I don't recognize the title from either March or April. So,
see, the only reason I know her name is because we had the same last name, Chrissy Metz, and it is Breakthrough,
which, let's see,
and it doesn't. The thing I want you doesn't even have a link for it, so I can't click on it.
Tell me if you see it anywhere.
No. Is it up there? Because you know sometimes they don't put those. Let's see. Breakthrough movie 2019. on the Google page, it just says April.
Yeah, Easter. That's what the trailer says. Easter.
So, that's what. Yeah, I don't even have it up.
Breakthrough.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
4/17.
It's gonna make a lot of money because it's one of those.
God's Not Dead.
Yeah.
Five minutes in heaven.
Yeah, all those things will just make a crap load of money for no ungodly reason. Well, no, it's actually the opposite for a very godly reason because people like God.
Well, but I was like. This lady's, like, internationally famous now. She's, like, one of the biggest parts, no pun intended, of one of the biggest shows on television. So, I mean, she...
I didn't do that. It was not me.
She...
You on that ledge all by yourself.
She could have done anything she wanted to do. And yet her first foray into motion pictures is going to be a Kirk Cameron-produced evangelical movie.
But she might be like Kirk Cameron. She's got the success of like, oh, no, God, I need to pay it back some kind of way. Here, I can do this. God bless her.
Truly, because she can lay hands on people and bring them back. So, that is also in April, the week before Infinity War Endgame. So...
And it's still going to make a big chunk of change while everybody else is going to see Endgame.
Mm-hmm. So let's move on to May. That looks like a fairly quiet May there, sir.
Oh, you sure? Let's see. So we have the aforementioned Ugly Dolls, which I'm probably going to see, but I don't want to. And Pitbull's in it, so I really don't want to. Let's see.
The Detective Pikachu movie.
Yeah, I was going to skip that one to come back to it, but... There's really nothing else to talk about before I get to the last two. I want to see how much money this movie's going to make. Because Pokemon is huge. And the character design for this movie is adorable. It still throws me off that Ryan Reynolds is the voice of Pikachu. But it looks like what I would imagine Pikachu would look like. And kids love it. So it'll be a nice like palate cleanser after whatever happens in Endgame. And it's like 2 weeks after that, so nice time for that. There's another dogs movie? What? No, I'm not even talking about that. We'll talk about the other movie right after that involves, you know, dogs and stuff. Uh-huh. John Wick. I never saw the second one. I don't know what to expect from the third one. I guess it's going to do all right. I really have no idea because I have no gauge of what people really felt for the second one. Before we get to the big ones, I will go to Brightburn, which is the James Gunn-produced movie. Basically, what would have happened if Superman came to Earth instead of being, you know, well-balanced and raised right? He was a psychopath, and he's got all these powers. What are you going to do? The answer? Die. That's it. But that movie looks really good. I'm never going to see it, but I think people will really take to it for that kind of thing. I didn't know Minecraft was still a thing.
No, that was going to be my thing that I was going to say.
I heard nothing about it, so I'm going to assume it's on here and will not be there when we get to this point in the year. And the last one before we get to the big ones, Rocket Man. I've been intrigued by this Elton John biopic starring Eggsy from Kingsman since we first heard about it. I've seen very minimal about it. I've seen the trailer. Didn't do too much for me, but I'm still just the prospect of it is intriguing enough. I don't know how much traction it'll get to actually make me go to see it. Particularly since the last 2 weeks are gonna be fought by a genie and a gaiju. Am I saying that right? Kaiju. I think kaiju is the right word to describe Godzilla, which comes out at the end of the month, and Aladdin that everybody's been skewering for pictures over the end of the last week. Because Will Smith is not blue.
And his outfit's blue.
His outfit is blue. And if you look at him, his hairstyle is just like the genie from the cartoon.
It is.
Which lets you know how ridiculous that hairstyle was in the first place.
But they weren't looking at the hairstyle.
No, they were just looking at the cartoon. But it's the exact same thing.
It is very authentic.
And they've also been skewering Hot Jafar. Not skewering, it's just like, why would she not pick Jafar over Aladdin? Look at Jafar and look at Aladdin, you're gonna pick Jafar. So, you know, the internet's doing internet things.
Guy Ritchie's Aladdin.
That's still, I don't understand, it does not compute. But here we are, and apparently, Will is going to actually be blue and CGI through most of the movie.
I would say that that's not gonna be accurate. I think they're trying to fan the stamp. I think they put him out there to kind of put out some PR fires because of the negative reactions to the photo, to the EW spread. I think, in all actuality, at the end of the day, when all is said and done, I think he'll be blue when he comes out of the lamp. When he starts doing Never Had a Friend Like You, he'll be blue. And then I think eventually he will materialize as a normal human being, be a normal human being for the majority of the film. But I think he's trying to placate fans. I also think those special effects aren't ready yet. And they don't want to put those images out yet, because if they put those images out half done, they will get even more skewed.
Yep.
So I really think that's the case of what's going on here. Another thing, Guy Ritchie. Love the dude. Awesome dude. The last thing he did was King Arthur. That's just fact. He did the Sherlock Holmes movies, Shaky Cam, gritty, in-your-face, you know, frames.
Nothing that you think of for a Disney movie.
What you think of when you think of broad, sprawling, sword and sandals epic, which is what Aladdin is supposed to be. I will hand him this. All the designs look exactly like what they were in the animated. And we know that there is a huge soft spot for Aladdin in that golden age of Disney. Mm-hmm. So it'll be really interesting to see, because you're a month removed from Endgame. The where should have been off from Pikachu. You don't share an audience with John Wick Chapter 3. And if you go back and you look at what was around in May of 2014, the Godzilla movie then was surrounded by other things. It still made decent money. I think this one, which is on my list of the top 5 movies of the year, as far as most anticipated for me, I cannot wait to see Godzilla King of the Monsters. I cannot wait for us to have as little human interaction as possible so that we can watch Rodan and Mothra and Ghidorah and Godzilla all battle each other and just make holy mess out of the entire world, and then seeing Kong rise out of the ocean and, you know, announce his presence. That's going to be awesome. They're filming Kong versus Godzilla now, so they're in an MCU situation where even if this tanks, we're still getting Kong versus Godzilla. So I'm happy. I think this is going to be a pleasant surprise of 2019. I think this is going to be one of those things where, kind of like Annihilation, where at the end of the year, it's still something people are talking about and still ending up on people's top 10 list. So that's probably my most anticipated for May. This seems, and I know that this is going to sound crazy, but this seems like a quieter May than normal to me. Yeah. The Rocket Man thing, and the only reason I'm interested in it is because it came from a pitch from Sir Elton John himself. Like, Sir Elton John was on the set of Kingsman Golden Circle and was talking to Egerton and talking to Vaughn and was pitching the idea for this movie. And, like, I want to make a biopic about my life, and these are the things I want to include in it, and I think you would be a good person to play me. And so when you know, this isn't a Freddie Mercury situation where the guy's been dead for 20 years and it's the people who have an axe to grind against him are the ones making a movie. It's literally the person saying, here's my idea for how I want to tell my life story on the screen, and I want you to do it.
Yeah, can't really say no to that.
Right. So, you know, and then the John Wick Chapter 3 thing, I'm interested in that because we're going to get some world building. You know how world building works. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. So we'll see.
Yeah.
So let's move on to June, Chad.
So, right off the bat, I'm just going to say the very first thing that's up there says Dark Phoenix. The fourth thing on that list says Untitled Fox Marvel Film 1. They're for the same date. I think we can just go ahead on and scrub that Untitled Fox Marvel Film off the list and say that Dark Phoenix has taken that place. What I will say about this movie is I forget that it exists until somebody brings it up. I still don't believe we see this movie in June. But since it says it's here right now, we'll just treat it that way. This is going to be the first Fox movie released after the acquisition is done. I think either way how this plays, like this may, if it actually comes out, it may delay us from getting X-Men anytime soon, but this is the last time this incarnation of X-Men is going to exist, period, point blank, it's done. I don't care how much money this movie makes, it's done, donezo after this. June is a little crowded, but kind of weird in that, so there's like Secret Life of Pets 2.
That's a thing, Chad.
It is a thing because it made a lot of money. Kids love it. My daughter loves it. Fine. Out is Louis C.K. in is Patton Oswalt. Whatever. The money, this not going to affect this movie's money at all. Then there are little things like another Shaft movie, which is coming out.
With Sam Jackson and
Richard Roundtree.
Right.
We have the original Shaft, the second Shaft, and now we have, this was originally called Son of Shaft, but now it's just Shaft again. And I think this Shaft is going to actually be the son of Samuel L. Jackson, whereas Samuel Jackson was not the son of Richard Roundtree, it was his nephew, which is good to know because Richard Roundtree is only 6 years older than Sam Jackson. Anyway, that's not how that works out. So I don't expect much from it. I expect it to make decent money. The Shaft name carries a certain weight in certain circles.
And that's been, what, 17, 18, 19 years? His version
of Shaft? I'm pretty sure it was Shaft 2000. Yeah, so yeah. It'll be 19 years. Then there's the remake of Child's Play. Again, I'm never, ever, ever seen this movie. Never stepping foot in it. My worst nightmare as a child was that goddamn movie. Never gonna see it. But horror's making this comeback and remakes, and I've seen The Damn Doll, and it creeps me out thinking about it. So I think it'll do decent money. And again, it's something that it's in that low. It plays against the other big movies that'll be around it, which the first of which is Men in Black International. We just got a trailer. It's got Chris Hemsworth, Tessa Thompson. Those two together are going to be fun.
Feels like an MCU movie.
It kind of does. It is the shine off of Men in Black. Well, are they enough to pull people back to
it? They did. this is what I cringe hearing people say that. No one who says that watched Men in Black 3, saw the critical reception to Men in Black 3. They're only looking at the box office for MI3. MI3 was a critical success and was a success with a large majority of the fan base and was a vast improvement from MIB2. MIB3 is a more sentimental movie, which, again, does more world building, tries to tie the mythology all up in a nice little bow with Tommy Lee Jones's character, having had a history and a past with Will Smith's father and doing all of that stuff. It was
quick side note about Will Smith's father. That is Luke Cage. Luke Cage is in Men in Black 3. I don't know how I found that out, because I've seen Men in Black 3 all the way through once, but I saw his part here recently. I'm like, this is my culture. But I've seen Men in Black 3. I didn't hate it as much as other people.
It actually got decent critical reception and just didn't do a lot box office wise. So the Men in Black franchise isn't in a horrible place. That movie was meant to tie Barry Jenkins' whole thing up. Sonnenfeld's whole deal up. So this is not even discounting that. This has got Annette Bening coming in as she had at the end of Men in Black 3. Yeah. This is saying that they're dealing with international and the Americans, so pulling kind of a Kingsman Golden Circle type deal in. You know, we were always told that there were, you know, the Men in Black were worldwide, so now you're bringing some of those international flair in. So that'll be an interesting movie, and it's not like, you know, hasn't made a good movie here lately.
His last movie's a $1 billion movie.
Yeah, his last movie's a $1 billion movie. His one before that's a pretty damn good movie in Straight Outta Compton. So,
how long ago was it between this one and
Men in Black 3? I want to say Men in Black 3 was like 2010. You can Google it, but I think it's like 10, 12, somewhere up in there.
Okay.
Because, like, Will Smith was not, like, a box office pariah yet at the time that they made. Like, he hadn't done After Earth.
That's right.
That he was going to make into a whole mythology and franchise.
2012.
Yeah.
So, 7 years?
Mm-hmm.
That's not that bad.
No.
But the movie that's going to win the month... Toy Story 4.
We assume the movie that is going to win the month is Toy Story 4. Assuming that the critical reception is the way that it was, assuming that, you know, the feels and the nostalgia are still there after being gut punched and having the nice little bow tied onto it for 3, which was, you know, 9 years ago now.
Yeah, I keep forgetting it's been that long. But it's in the same position as Incredibles 2 from this year.
And the same position as it has been for all 3 of the previous releases this summer.
And I can't see it getting worse reviews than Incredibles 2, which had good reviews. I don't think it were great as the first one, but they were good. If that all combines to do that, Incredibles 2 was 3 on the domestic list. Toy Story 4 is probably going to be sitting in that same kind of position come the end of the year.
Interesting for me to see that we're getting new James Mangold and new Danny Boyle in June, and we don't have titles for them or any information on them. So I don't know that we're actually going to get those, but it would be interesting to get new films from those creators. So let's move on to January, a very light July at this point.
It is light, but I mean, so...
Again, bookending.
It is bookending. I'm just going to go with the smallest of the bookends, which is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Quentin Tarantino movie, that's going to involve the Manson murders, but not be about the Manson murders. It has DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, I can't remember who else is in it, but and he's been putting this together. I think they shot it last year, so to see it finally come together, what does this movie look like? And I don't know. I want to see like a trailer or something to get a kind of feel for what this is, but. It's Quentin Tarantino. He's got the cast that he has. It's going to bring eyeballs to it, so I'm eager to see that. But July is about 2 movies. Spider-Man and The Lion King.
Spider-Man Far From Home, which picks up moments after the end of Avengers Endgame.
Yep, that is the story they keep telling us. I lied. I do think Endgame is going to have a bit of time travel in it, because I don't think there's any possible way you have any, in this universe they created, that there have any time where normal people know that the goddamn apocalypse happened. I don't think there's any time that that could happen. So I do think when they defeat Thanos, I think they defeat Thanos before the first step. They'll do something to fight him the first time and then fight it and then officially defeat him before the first step. So with that said, Far From Home picking up right from that. We still haven't gotten a trailer from that. There's trailer descriptions out there. Apparently now we'll get a trailer after the new year. So it's whatever. My only thing with this is Spider-Man is the best-selling superhero on the goddamn planet. And bar none and everything. And it's not even close. It's like Spider-Man, big gap, Batman. But a Spider-Man movie has not hit $1 billion yet. Building off of Infinity War, Endgame, and Into the Spider-Verse. Also following Homecoming. If anyone is primed to do it, it's this one. I still don't think it will, though. It'll be up there, but I don't think it's going to hit $1 billion.
But we all feel easier now. We feel much, much easier now that, you know, Pascal and other and Rothman and other people have come out saying, yeah, we're fine with Marvel. Let's work with Marvel for as long as we want. And Marvel's going to bring in Mysterio in a good guy role, allegedly. To kind of help team up with Peter Parker and bring in the Elementals.
I'm not doing cartwheels over that idea, but you know, Marvel we trust, we'll see what happens.
And of course we have the live action Lion King.
Live action in quotes, because this movie's animated.
It's all mocap.
Mocap and green screens and digital characters. It's an animated movie. It's just made in the vein of...
It's made in a computer instead of hand-drawn animation.
Yeah. Made to look like real characters instead of animated characters. So, call it what you will, but we know what this is. Of the remakes that Disney's making this year, I think this one has the best shot of...
It's the lock.
Yeah, to make all the money and to please the people. Particularly with the cast. However, I'm still disappointed that Be Prepared is not in this movie, as it is the greatest villain song from this movie.
It is.
And we will not get to see it live action. I need some music at least. Please and thank you, Jon Favreau. But with that said, this movie, after seeing what he did with Jungle Book, I don't think he can fail at this. If he's going to do some new things, but it's Lion King. And you're making it look like real animals. I think that's the lockiest of locks of remakes.
I would agree. And also interested that we're supposed to get a Conjuring film in 7 months and nobody has heard anything about it. And I don't know that Juan's been asked anything about it on the press tour for Aquaman.
It's not like they take a long time to make or cost that much. So, you know, if they did it, I wouldn't be surprised.
Let's move on to August, Chad. What catches your eye in August besides the New Mutants movie that does not exist?
So, did we ever get a date for the Hobbs and Shaw spinoff Fast and Furious movie?
I think we did recently.
Well, they haven't updated this because it's going to be in August. It's going to be that spot. It has to be. It just says Untitled Fast and Furious spinoff. We have one of those in the pike.
Update to Box Office Mojo. You guys need to go back through your 2019 calendar and erase some redundancies.
Yeah. The thing that first stands out to me is the very first thing on that list, which is this Dora the Explorer movie, which I've heard a whole lot about. I've seen nothing for. I know Benicio del Toro's in it, and he's a villain, but I know nothing else about this movie. So the fact that this exists in any form or fashion is mind-boggling to me.
There are pictures of the girl. She looks very adorable.
I haven't seen it. I'm going to have to go back and look. Because it's so hard because every time I've seen stuff, it's like parodies of the Dora the Explorer movie. New Mutants is never going to happen. House of Shaw, yeah, we'll get that. I don't know what a WB event film could be because to me, that's like a DC film or a Harry Potter film, which we're not getting either. So I think that's going. Artemis Fowl. Apparently, Beloved Stories. Disney's doing it. I don't think it's going to do well at all. At all. Angry Birds 2, the first one made money. This makes sense. It's right before kids go back to school. Don't want to see it. Okay, cool. The rest of these, I don't really know.
It's cool.
Well, Angel Has Fallen. Is that part of the damn...
That is Gerard Butler doing his thing like he did in the submarine movie that tanked this year.
So Angel Has Fallen, we've got a sequel to...
White House Has Fallen, Olympus Has Fallen,
and
London Has
Fallen.
Fallen.
Now we have Angel Has Fallen. Whatever. Yeah, it's there. It made enough money to make a sequel. I don't think it's going to do good, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. Interested to see how Dora the Explorer gets pulled off. Don't think New Mutants is actually going to come out.
Nope.
Artemis Fowl is going to be interesting. Again, a Disney film. Looking to see how the young adult novel translates. We're not in 2010 anymore. These kind of things have not been as successful as they were back then.
I'm thinking like BFG for this.
Yeah, that's my concern there. Although, you know, it is a Kenneth Branagh feature, so that can help it. So, and I don't know if that Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, if that is, I think that's a horror anthology. I'm not sure if it's the same as the Are You Afraid of the Dark movie been bandied about. Well, Angel Has Fallen, of course, obviously interesting. And I also want to take this opportunity, because I see my boyfriend's meds on there for August. I want to take this opportunity to plug a movie that I should have plugged earlier in the calendar, 5 Feet Apart, which I believe could be this year's Fault in Our Stars. Literally about two young kids in a hospital, teens falling in love, and they have to stay 5 feet apart because of their
ailments.
It looks like it could be really sweet and really fun and be that kind of a movie. Maybe Josh Boone should have made that instead of, you know, New Mutants. So yeah, that's what I see for August. I mean, kind of a dead spot. If that is Hobbs and Shaw, I think that'll win the month easily.
Without a doubt.
So let's move on to September. I don't think there's, you know, as much as I love me some Downton Abbey, I don't necessarily think that it's going to challenge It Chapter 2 for supremacy.
No, it's taken this month, and it's not even close. I don't know. Except for Downton Abbey, I don't know one of them. There's another movie, I know what it is. But It Chapter 2 is taking it. It's about time we start seeing promotional stuff for that. I mean, I don't think we'll get like a full trailer, but like pictures of the sets and stuff we'll probably get soon. Downton Abbey, fans of the show will probably go out to see whatever this is. I have no idea.
It's the actual movie that is the continuation of the show.
Yeah, people that like the show will go and see it. The other movie I know on this list is Spies in Disguise. Why? Because I have a 9-year-old. And they show the trailer for this, and it is an animated movie. Will Smith is in it. He plays a very suave, debonair spy that is turned into a squirrel or some madness like this.
Squirrel or a pigeon or something.
Yeah, it's pigeon. That's what it is. He's turned into a pigeon, and he has to team up with the kid to turn him into a pigeon, who is none other than our Spider-Man, Tom Holland, and calamity ensues. So that's what that movie is. It's the only kids' movie that month. It'll be like a month after Angry Birds 2. It'll probably make a little chunk of change.
So I'm going to assume that this Judy is what I think it is. This is a Oscar contender for 2019. You need to keep an eye on now. If it's coming out on the 27th of September, that means more than likely it will play at Toronto earlier on Labor Day weekend. You know, we had First Man, which came out and debuted in a similar window earlier this year and kind of fell apart off the beaten path for awards consideration. I believe this is the Cate Blanchett as Judy Garland movie.
Oh, if it's that, I'm in there.
Yeah.
I'm in that one.
My favorite telling of the Judy Garland story would be Judy Garland, Me and My Shadows, which was the TV miniseries they did with James Gardner, back in the day, in the late 90s, early 2000s.
I don't remember.
That was probably my favorite in the book. Judy Garland, Me and My Shadows is really, really good as well. Give me Cate Blanchett in a powerhouse performance that's award worthy any day of the week.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so let's move on to October.
So
you have your Joker movie that no one ever thought would be a thing.
Yeah, but with the staying power of Venom, and it came out right around the same time, I think the Joker movie, if it I mean, I don't have a problem with the talent behind it, so I think it's going to be a good movie. With that,
this is a packed October.
But I think it's going to run away like Venom did. Venom ran away and hid and made a whole bunch of money. Right. I don't think it's going to make that much money.
But Chad, look at what kind of genre stuff with deep cult followings you have here. You've got Zombieland 2, which people have wanted for a very, very long time. You've got an Adams Family movie, which will be the first new Adams Family movie since 1992. Okay? People love Adams Family Values and Adams Family.
It is animated, though.
Right, but still. And you've got the Are You Afraid of the Dark movie, which we mentioned earlier, which had a cult following as a kid's show. It's going to be a horror anthology. If Goosebumps and House with a Clock in the Walls can make money, I'm sure that Are You Afraid of the Dark movie can make money. And you've got another Blumhouse movie slated for 19 at that point. I mean, yeah, Joker is going to probably lead the month, but that's a lot of stuff right there that has...
Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. That's the Mr. Rogers movie
with Tom Hanks. Right, with Tom Hanks, yeah.
I'm all in for that one, too. But, okay, so...
Especially following Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Which I still haven't seen. Go see that.
It's on DVD now. You can buy it at Walmart.
That means I can rent it somewhere online. Might do that tomorrow. But I don't see... So, I don't think the audience of Joker is going for fits with anything except for Zombieland 2. I think Zombieland 2 is in that ballpark. And it is a week later, so it could eat into it. But I think Joker can make a lot of money the first weekend and then just kind of coast through the rest of the month and make up a good chunk of change.
Be interesting. I don't know if that Gemini Man, I don't know if that's what that is. But, I mean, if you got a Blumhouse movie coming out in October, you've got a Zombieland sequel, which, you know, he got his money from off of Venom and his capital off of Venom, so he can definitely do it, and everybody's coming back. Except for Bill Murray. That's much anticipated. And the Are You Afraid of the Dark movie, something people have been curious about. An animated Addams Family movie. The Woman in the Window, I think, is based off a book, which is kind of supposed to be like a Gone Girl. A Gone Girl Simple Favor type of thing. Both of those made money. It'll be an interesting October. And we don't know what kind of a reception Todd Phillips' Joker movie is going to get. I think that Warner's is going to be nuts enough to unveil this thing in a film fest.
Probably, yeah.
And whether it be Telluride, whether it be Toronto, whether it be AFI Fest, whether it be the New York Film Festival, I think they're going to show this at some kind of
festival. This is what they purport to be, the auteur-driven studio. This is an auteur-driven movie. This is the kind of artsy stuff that they want to hang their hat on. There's no doubt that this is going to a festival.
Yeah, in the Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood movie, the Tom Hanks is Mr. Rogers, which, I mean, there's no one, we've said it multiple times, there's no one else in Hollywood right now you would peg to be Mr. Rogers than Tom Hanks.
Perfect casting. That picture came out of him tying his shoe, like, you got my money, bro, I'm already there.
That and his time as Walt Disney in Saving Mr. Banks.
Yeah.
So let's move on to November. Almost a year removed. But what do you see here that's interesting to you? Because we get the Terminator sequel, we get the Charlie's Angels reboot, we get the very, very creepy Sonic the Hedgehog movie, and we get the Kingsman prequel, we get Frozen 2, we get Knives Out, which is a horror thing, and Queen and Slim. So, your thoughts?
So, Frozen 2 is, I'm not going to say interesting, I just think Frozen 2 is going...
saying that Sonic the Hedgehog and...
Oh, no, I got thoughts
on Frozen 2 are not going to have the same audience?
I don't think so, but I got thoughts on Sonic. Frozen 2, because of what the first movie was, I don't think this one can do that. However... because of what the first movie was, I think it's going to drive a lot of business to that thing. The only thing that concerns me is it's like the Lego thing. I didn't realize Lego was 5 years apart, but I know. My daughter was probably I think it's the same year or the year right before. So she was like 4. She's 9 now. She'll be 10 when this comes out. So there's a big gap between watching Frozen and watching Frozen 2. However, the key to all this is the goddamn song from the first Frozen
Let it go.
Yes, it is so ingrained in especially little girls that age. It's like wired into their DNA now. It comes on, they just start saying they can't even help it. So that's going to help out a lot with Frozen 2. I just want to see how big of a thing it can be. Sonic the Hedgehog. I'm not a fan of CGI, of real world movies with CGI characters in it. That's what this movie is.
And to seen those legs, Chad?
And we've only seen the silhouette, but we've seen Sonic's jacked up steroids and calf muscles just staring at us in the picture. So nobody knows what it looks like. But when you don't know what it looks like, the internet goes to speculating. And none of the speculating is good. So I want to see what Sonic looks like.
Our good friends at Birth Movies Death that ran a whole contest on.
What did you look at?
Yeah.
I'm not going to look that one up. I don't think it's going to be good because the only movie like that recently that was good is Paddington. But the difference with Paddington is not like...
He's a cute, adorable bear, not an actual hedgehog.
Well, all those other movies is like those characters are in their world and then they come over to our world and they're separated. I think this is what Sonic is going to be. Paddington is just already in that world. He just meets his family. So, I don't have any hope for Sonic the Hedgehog. I want to see what it looks like to get the nightmares over with. The new Charlie's Angels. I'm not big one way or another on it. It's a new team, more diverse team. That's going to be interesting. Terminator. I think this is the time. It's like, put up, shut up.
James is involved, so.
Yeah, James is involved.
No denying this one.
Put up or shut up time.
Linda Hamilton's back.
It's got to be good, and it's got to do what you said it's going to do. Otherwise, you just...
Pack this shit up.
Put this one on mothballs. It's over. It's done. We got T2, and that's it. That's where we stop. The rest of them...
I'm interested in the Kingsman prequel. I'm interested to see what they're going to do there. I'm interested in what kind of high-priced talent he can recruit for that. I'm very interested in, you know, the Sonic and how that's going to merge in with the real world. Charlie's Angels is an interesting proposition because I feel like Elizabeth Banks, like, in that kind of a tone, it could be really good, but it could also be really bad.
Yeah.
And, again, we're talking about 2019, not 2009, so the culture might be a little bit different. So that'll be interesting. But to me... Definitely, I think Frozen 2 runs away with this month. I don't think it's a question. I think the nostalgia factor around this is going to be huge. And I think the numbers, I mean, this is the same release corridor from 2013. This is the same release corridor from Moana. Same release corridor for Wreck-It Ralph. Ralph breaks the internet. So, I mean, they've had success in this corridor with animated movies. Brand name top of the line, IP for them. I don't think there's any question. Frozen 2 wins the month of November.
I'll agree.
Well, that would bring us then to the month of hell for me, because I will be forced to sit through another Jumanji movie that is a bastardization of all things Robin Williams.
The last one was good.
It was okay.
It was okay.
The Rock and Kevin Hart, you know, Kevin Hart's not good enough to host the Oscars, but he is good enough to ruin my childhood. So we get a Jumanji sequel. Rock's on board doing that thing, not pumping out as many movies as quickly now, thank God, finally deciding to, you know, have more kids and take a break, which is good. Blumhouse is supposed to put out another movie. A Masters of the Universe movie that has no director for the third time. Don't think it's going to make this date.
We did this exact same thing last year. We got to December and was like, oh, Masters of the Universe is there. I don't think it's going to be there. But it's listed there. And here we are again. Deja vu. We're probably doing this again right here next year saying the same exact thing. Because that movie ain't getting made this year.
I'm really interested in a couple of December releases that right now, as soon as this ceremony for the Oscars is over this year, will be on my watch list for next year's ceremony. The first will be this 1917 movie from Universal, which is a World War One movie, which comes a year after the century mark for the conflict and the Armistice. I really like that. That could be a movie to definitely watch. The other one to really watch is one of my favorite films from last year was Lady Bird. We're gonna get Greta Gerwig's Little Women with a all-star female cast and Timothy Clement in 2019. They released The Little Women this year. It did poorly. They released the Little Women version here. This year it ended up in like the 400s of the box office. Didn't make any money. This is going to make money.
Yeah, that one.
And then this is going to be an awards contender. It'll probably debut at Telluride or New York Film Festival. Really, really interested in seeing what's going to happen. But none of that's going to win the month of December.
No, wait, there's something else?
There's some small movie that we're going to get a first trailer for in April. What are your thoughts on J.J. Abrams' Star Wars Episode 9, Revenge of the Resistance?
So I will tell you my honest to God thoughts on this movie is I have none. Not a single solitary thing.
I loathe this movie. I do not... Russian trolls like eight made things worse last time. I don't want to live through this again.
And see, that's why I have nothing, because of that, and because we're so far out from it. Like, I see stuff about Star Wars, and if it even comes close to this movie, I shut it out. I'm like, I'm not doing this with none of y'all. I don't know anything about this movie. I don't want to know anything about this movie until somebody officially tells me anything about this movie. So I know this movie's coming. I know it's coming next year.
And I know that we'll get a trailer in April, and we'll get a trailer in October.
And that's it.
And that's it. We'll get a panel at Celebration.
Once I get the trailer and we get the panel, we can talk about things that have officially been said. Then I'll have like some form of opinion. But as of right now...
Here's my question. Is Mark Hamill on that cast list? Or does JJ try to play Mystery Box?
I don't know. I never looked at it. If I were to guess, I would say he's not on the cast list, but we all know he's in the goddamn movie. So, you know, JJ just can't not do this.
And this is your reminder, if you have not had a chance yet, go see Overlord. Find it somewhere on iTunes or something. Really, really good movie this year. Another movie that made my top 10, produced by JJ Abrams. And for many, many years, we thought that it was, you know, a Cloverfield movie, and it's not at all, which is good. I'm ready for episode 9. I'm ready for the conclusion of this trilogy. I'm ready to go buy a big, expensive Blu-ray DVD set of all 9 movies plus Rogue One and Solo and own it. Because it's going to be a while before we get whatever Ryan's doing and whatever the guys from Game of Thrones are doing. And so we're going to live in this nice, comfortable space where as the internet has called it, the fanfic trilogy is going to be done, and we can all have the 9-act saga on DVD. I've told the story many, many, many times that, like, I had the complete saga Blu-ray with the picture from Phantom Menace on it, with episode 1 with Anakin walking by and the Shadow of Vader on the cover. I had that Blu-ray DVD set in my hand the day before Disney announced they had purchased Lucasfilm. And they were going to do episode 7, 8, and 9. And I was literally like, do I want to buy this? Because it was on sale. And I put it back and said, well, you know, it'll be here at the end of the week when I get paid. And then the next day they come out and say, 7, 8, and 9! And I'm like, I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm the guy who, like, gets the...
The box sets.
I wait and get the box sets. I mean, like, you know, pay one big price. I don't care if it's going to be $200. I'm getting a lot of money for my $200.
You're right. Yeah, I'm not that guy. I ain't got that kind of patience. When you come out, gotta get them out.
Think about the fact that when Marvel releases the box set for Phase 3, you're going to have 10 movies in that thing.
How many is 2?
6. Phase 1 and Phase 2 are 6 movies apiece.
10 movies. Like 33 hours of stuff.
And that will include the Blu-ray... And the DVD and the Blu-ray for each movie. And in some cases, we'll include a 3D version, because there were still some movies that were released 3D. In 3D. Plus bonus feature disc.
Things will be massive.
Yes. Yeah. And hopefully, if one is in the suitcase and one is in the orb, there needs to be one with the gauntlet with the 10 movies in it.
Yeah, but anyway.
That's not gonna happen. May happen. I mean, they had to fight for a lawsuit to get the to get the briefcase done, so maybe. But I mean, I'm excited for 9. Let's get the story done. Let's figure out Kylo and Rey's fate. Let's you know, let old man Luke show up in Space Ghost form and piss everybody off. And let's have fun with it, man. I mean, look, one of my favorite lines from The People vs. George Lucas is at the end of the movie, when they've basically done this whole thing obliterating Lucas for like an hour and a half and like laying the case down for like why he, you know, why he screwed everything up, why he's also a sympathetic figure. The end of it, they say, there's a guy who says, "We never asked for great Star Wars from Lucas. We just asked for more."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still asking him for more. And this is before the movie was made, before Disney had purchased. I said, "I want more. George Lucas, make more Star Wars, please. I may disagree with it. I may not like it, but please make more Star Wars. Because it's the thing I love and the thing that I enjoy. And I'm not asking you to make good movies. I'm just asking you to make more movies." And that's the way that I look at this trilogy. You can say that it's all fan fiction. There were many, many pieces put out after Force Awakens that were like, Star Wars is fan fiction. Of course it's fan fiction. By definition, anything not made by the original creator of the material is fan fiction. All of those expanded universe books, all those expanded universe comics, all of that stuff, while George allowed it to happen, and he allowed the licenses of the usage of the names and famous names and likenesses, George didn't write a whole bunch of those.
Nope.
But they exist, and they're essentially the equivalent of highly produced fan fiction. Yep. And you love them. This is a generation of filmmakers who grew up on Star Wars, who love Star Wars, telling their idea of what happened after the Empire fell. It just so happens that it's now canon. It would have been the same way if me or you would have taken the job on Episode 7.
Yep.
It would have been our idea of what happened after the fall of the Empire. No one was going to go back, and no one was going to take all the books that were released from 83 to 2012, and try and compile them all and figure out the different timelines and the different canons and come up with what happened after, you know, after the fall of the Empire. Hell, most of the most popular stuff from the expanded universe focuses on the Clone Wars, and it focuses on the Old Republic.
Yep.
It doesn't focus on the period following following Jedi. So, you know, Star Wars fans, chill. Like, at least you got more Star Wars. And when George would have died and someone would have taken this over, you would have been in the exact same position. Yeah. And by the way, I'm sorry, but if you want to go read Lucas's interviews about what he was pitching to Disney and what he handed Disney when he handed those treatments to Disney for 7, 8, and 9, be very, very grateful that J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan and Michael Arndt, who's still the most underrated person in the history of cinema, because he has secrets that no one else will ever know, be grateful for what they did, because you could have gotten something far, far worse. Mm. So, you know, whatever happens in 9, whatever they decide the end of the Kylo and Rey story is, more power to them. That's their story. Let them have it.
Yep.
It's like the Power Rangers movie. I got my Power Rangers movie in 95. I got it at the height of Power Rangers mania. I got it when I was 8 years old. Like, it was perfect for me. It's goofy, it's corny, it's shoddy, it's everything. But it's my Power Rangers movie, and I got it at the right time for me. They remade it. They made it decently. I can't be, like, that's some kid's Power Rangers movie.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe turns them on to going on to Netflix and finding the original 8 series and figuring out what they wanted to do. And, you know, this is J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy's version of events of what happened after the Empire fell. I can respect their vision.
That's all you can do.
Yeah.
As a fan, that's all you can do.
Because your conversations about what happened, and my conversations about what happened in the last 25 years since the end of the original trilogy, 30 plus years about after the original trilogy, are different.
Yep.
And if I go pull 10 nerds sitting in a comic book shop somewhere, each one of them is going to have a different idea of what happened. None of us are right. None of us are wrong. I have maintained, and I will continue to maintain, that if Luke Skywalker had lit up his lightsaber and jumped into frame and chopped a whole bunch of First Order troopers in half and been a true badass, that 95% of the old grumpy old men who were out there would have been satisfied.
Yep, that's what they wanted.
I think the grumpy old men are frustrated and pissed off because they didn't get to see Luke do anything that they traditionally view as strong man Luke. And that completely ignores the amount of strength and power of the Force it took to do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
It took so much use of the Force for him to do what he did that it literally killed him. Like Kylo says verbatim in the movie, "You can't be here, you can't be doing this. Because the amount of power it would take you to do this, to project yourself across the universe like this, would kill you." And it does.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a guy with brute physical force coming in and force... It's not Qui-Gon Jinn at the beginning of Phantom Menace. Like Lucas has said time and time again, the reason he puts that action set piece at the beginning of Phantom Menace is to show the strength of the Jedi's at the height of their power. They wanted something like that from Old Man Luke, and they didn't get it. They didn't even get Old Man Luke raising the X-Wing out of the water.
No, he just looked at it.
Right. They don't even get him raising the X-Wing out of the water, getting in it, and going to the planet to literally confront Kylo. They don't even get that. They don't even get the image of Luke back in the X-Wing with R2-D2. So, live with it. Respect it. It's not your version. It's not my version, but it's their version, and they're the ones who get to play canon. So, you know, I have 5,000 different ideas for how Vince should have done the invasion angle when WCW died. He didn't take any of them.
Nope.
He did it his own way and buried every WCW guy that came around except for Booker T and Rey Mysterio. But, you know, that fight between Booker T and Austin in the grocery store is pretty fun.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's the whole thing. It wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't what you wanted.
No.
But it was what Vince wanted to do, and that's what we got. And that's what we have to live with. So.
And again, that's all you can do.
Exactly. So that is our conclusion after our epic almost 2 hours of conversation. That is the conclusion of our wrap-up for 2019. I look forward to 2018. I will have my top 10 list up on my Twitter account in the next 24 hours. It should be a lot of fun going into 2019 because there's a lot of really big movies and a lot of fun movies. And sure, a lot of movies that we didn't cover here today that'll come out of left field and surprise us and get us talking.
So, it always does. That's why it's fun.
Always fun. This is why we enjoy doing what we do. And thank you for tuning in all throughout the year. We'd like to again thank T-Bob Hebert for coming on with us and having conversations about film. I'd like to thank Jim from IGN for coming on, even though we can't do so in his official capacity. You can do so as our friend. Mm-hmm. And we thank Nathan Velasquez for coming on. And of course, I thank Chad for taking time out of his week every week, sometimes 2 or 3 weeks, to kind of chalk out and talk some movies. It's been fun. And we look forward to a thrilling and adventurous 2019. So, from all of us to all of you, have a happy 2019, and we'll see you on the other side.